As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store. When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeatherSnapCam.com. That's FeatherSnapCam.com. Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, welcome to Bees in the News, episode 16. As always, I think we got the best of the best for this week's bee news. Say we've got articles out of Canada, the UK. We've got Plymouth, Minnesota, an article from Penn State. And one more that is just, it's from nature.com. It's another one of their research papers they've put out. So let's jump right in with the first article coming to us out of Canada. Where are the bees? How Saskatchewan finds itself in a honey shortage. The prairies are well known among beekeepers as the powerhouse for honey production in Canada, but this year things are looking a little less sweet. In 2024, Canadian honeybee colonies across Western Canada say honey production is down while bee disease is on the rise. One stack of boxes or one colony can produce up to 200 pounds on average or more of honey in a year, Sarah Wood, the University of Saskatchewan Associate Professor and Research Chair in Pollinator Health, described. Unrelated story, I have a cousin named Sarah Wood. Hello, Sarah, how are you? In years where we have less nectar or the weather doesn't cooperate as much, then we can expect lower yields. Wood said lots of the stress of the colonies comes from the cold spring across the province and now the extreme heat. As a result, the bees are much more susceptible to disease, particularly a disease called European foul brood that affects the baby bees in the hive and prevents the colony from growing as quickly, Wood said. Now, as a quick note, there are two types of foul brood. You have European and American foul brood. American foul brood is definitely going to be worse, but they are both a very disruptive, devastating bacterial infection that can get into a hive. It affects the brood, and it's not just the kind of thing where it's like, oh, well, that kind of stinks. Let me just get rid of this little section of comb, or let me just throw this one frame away. You are particularly, there are some treatments available kind of on the European side of things, but on American foul brood, like you're burning everything down. It's very, very disruptive to a bee colony and really for the entire apiary at that matter, because anything that's come in contact with that hive would have to be completely disinfected through a whole other process. And like I said, most of the bee hardware is getting burned. European foul brood disease can devastate a full-size colony, reducing it to half or a third of its strength. And while there isn't much beekeepers can do about the disease, Wood and her research team are using the downfall of honey production to help manage and discover new ways to treat it. We sort of took advantage of a natural outbreak of the disease, and we explored different treatment options, Wood said. Another concern for beekeepers is the varroa mite parasite. Varroa mites are the biggest killer of bees in North America, if not the world, Jeff Wilson, an apiculture provincial specialist, said. If we don't get them under control, they will affect the wintering of the bees for next spring. Roughly one-third of people's food relies on their pollination. As for the honey shortage, Wood said the bees don't currently have much in the environment for them to forage, so her team is finishing gathering honey for the last time this season. Okay, moving on to the next article. Now, typically, I do like to include at least one kind of deep dive scientific article, you know, every week. And, of course, this week is no exception. And, again, it's nature.com under the scientific reports. And, as always, all the links to these articles are going to be on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage. So there'll be links to all of that in there. Abstract. The insect wing is one of the most important characteristics that allow insects to occupy most of the habitats on the planet. Honeybee wings has been the subject of studies on the venation abnormalities. A total of 424 honeybees from 14 locations were collected, and all four wings were removed and examined for 19 abnormalities on the forewings and 6 abnormalities on the hind wings. In general, supernumerary veins were the most common abnormalities seen, and abnormalities number 23, 2, 6, 1, 5, 21, 10, 13 had the highest, and abnormalities 11, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 25 had the lowest frequencies. I'm not going to keep reading anymore because, again, this is a very deep dive scientific article. You are either scientific and want to read about some of these really detailed biological, entomological kind of things, or you don't, and I'm not going to waste your time and bore you with it. So the article will be linked in there. It talks all about, you know, morphological diversity in the insect wing and other cool things. So worth checking out. All right, the next is coming to us from the EU Research and Innovation magazine. Smart hives and dancing robot bees could boost sustainable beekeeping. Researchers are using big data and smart technologies to improve conditions for bees and guide beekeepers. Now, I'm going to take a quick pause here because if you are not involved in technology in any capacity, big data probably doesn't mean a whole lot to you. When we talk about big data, what we're talking about is massive amounts of large, of course, big, right? Big data, massive amounts, large amounts of data that we can then aggregate together and look for things that are common, look for things that are repeating. So, for example, let's say I owned a fleet of vehicles that, you know, did deliveries. Like I own a fleet of like FedEx vehicles or UPS vehicles. And we find that, you know, we have a service schedule for all the vehicles. And every so many miles of operation, we're finding there's this one part that seems to always fail. So whenever somebody brings a vehicle in for any kind of routine maintenance, if we're within a certain window, we're automatically going to replace that part so they don't have a separate maintenance downtime when that thing just randomly breaks on its own and we got to get a tow truck and have it towed in for repair and all that kind of stuff. So we're taking a massive amount of data and learning from that data and seeing what patterns form and things like that that we can use to really optimize business. Now, there's a whole lot of ways that this is used in bad ways and negative ways and, you know, big tech companies and all that kind of stuff. Not going to get into that with you right now. Just want to kind of give you a heads up of what some of this data would look like. With an electronic ping, Professor Dirk de Graaf gets an alert on his smartphone. It's a message from a beehive that it's in trouble. De Graaf, a professor of biomedical physiology and insect physiology at the head of the Laboratory of Molecular Entomology and Bee Pathology at the University of Ghent, Belgium, has spent the last 5 years developing a data collection system for beehives that he hopes can greatly improve survival rates. Smart hives. As part of a Europe-wide research initiative, the Bee Good Project, that's B-G-O-O-D Project, de Graaf and a team of researchers from 13 European countries joined forces between mid-2019 and November of last year to explore how new technologies could help support both the health of bees and the sustainability of beekeeping. The researchers have created a monitoring system that can identify problems in a hive and give tailored advice to the beekeeper on how to intervene. This system is a potentially crucial ally for beekeepers, of which there are an estimated 615,000 in the EU in 2021. They developed a digital comb, a thin circuit board equipped with various sensors around which bees build their combs. Several of these in each hive can then transmit data to researchers, providing real-time monitoring. The next step was to work out how to best interpret the data. Their challenge was to figure out which parameters contribute most to the health status of a colony, said de Graaf. Over 3 seasons, the team monitored close to 400 colonies spread across 13 participating countries, allowing them to build algorithms to help interpret the data gathered by the digital combs. It turns out that weight is a good indicator of whether a colony will survive in the winter, said DeGroff. Using our technology, we can now identify colonies that need intervention. This is then communicated to the beekeepers via tailored alerts with specific instructions. Tech-savvy beekeeping. Bees are a keystone species essential for pollinating wild plants and many cultivated food crops, including chocolate, coffee, tomatoes, and blueberries. It is estimated that around 4 in 5 crop and wild flowering plant species in Europe depend, at least to some extent, on insect pollination. Yet the numbers of wild pollinators in Europe and the world are declining rapidly due to a combination of habitat loss, pesticides, and herbicides. According to the European Red List, the populations of around 1 in 3 bee, butterfly, and hoverfly species are threatened. For DeGroff, the effects of pesticides are particularly detrimental. Very often, the bees don't die immediately when they are exposed to pesticides, but they develop memory issues and eventually fail to return to the hive, said DeGroff. Automatic hive data collection is already being used by some beekeepers, mostly younger ones, who are tech-savvy. Now the aim is to promote the use of these tools throughout the beekeeping community, which will allow larger-scale data gathering. To this end, the researchers are working closely with the EU Bee Partnership, an EU-wide bee health and data management platform created in 2017. More beekeepers relying on this would be a complete game-changer. It would help us to look at bee health from a different angle, said DeGroff. So there's a bit more to the article, but like I said, I think that technology, as a former technologist myself, I still get a little bit geeked out on this stuff. I really wish there was a clean, simple, and reliable way to gather this data. If it's something as simple as getting the weight, and that's really the biggest indicator, that's not really as cool. But having that integrated circuit of sorts inside the comb, like, that's pretty wild. That's neat. But again, I always use the so what test. So you tell me that you have all this capability to report all these things going on inside the comb and to the individual, you know, honey cell level. But what does that do for me? What am I gaining from that? And that's where I get, you know, kind of the so what. So if you tell me, well, when it, like we're able to predict, as an example, based on XYZ conditions that are all showing themselves at the same time, combined with this temperature and these other features, and when you see those conditions, it means you probably have foul brood, or you probably have a problem with Varroa, or you probably have something else. If you can get that, like, that's pretty cool and amazing. I definitely think there's a lot that could be done with it, and I think there's a lot more to be developed. So hopefully they'll figure it out at some point in time. But very cool, very interesting. Okay, next on the list is coming to us out of Plymouth, Minnesota. And linked in the article is a good 2-minute video. I think it's worth watching. It's kind of neat. Loose Line Brewing in Plymouth is abuzz with activity, especially on its roof. The brewery installed a set of beehives this spring. Tim Nauman, owner of Loose Line Brewing, said the goal is partly to help pollinators, which are increasingly threatened as their habitat disappears. If we didn't have pollinators, most of the plants, if not all the plants, would be gone, Nauman said. And the animals die, we die. So you know, the pollinators are a huge impact to the world, to the environment as we know them. He said honeybees are not typically aggressive. Likewise, by keeping hives on the roof, they're separated from the customer base. In general, bees are pretty peaceful. They try to gather nectar and pollen, Nauman said. They want to make their honey, and they're not really thinking about it less and less when we're interrupting their day or trying to cause them harm. So, it, you know, it's kind of a cool thing. You're ready to get a local guy. He's got a nice, you know, business here that's doing well. And the really kind of cool part about it, though, that I liked is he says here in the article, I'm fast forwarding a little bit, but he's talking about, hey, there's more going on, you know, than just what we have going on the roof. Loose Line plans to use the honey in a new beer. It's actually kind of still top secret, Nauman said. All I can say is that it'll be an ale. It's going to use the honey, and it'll take about 50 pounds of honey to make the honey beer. And I can also guarantee that it will be delicious. So their website is Loose Line Brewing. It's LuceLineBrewing.com. And according to the link here in the article, the beer will be unveiled at a party on October 12th. It's a collaborative effort with the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum and the University of Minnesota Bee Squad and the Minnesota Hobby Beekeepers. So if you're into a honey sweet ale, definitely worth checking out. I'm going to have to pass myself, but it definitely sounds pretty tasty. All right, everybody. And last but not least, coming to us out of Penn State here in the U.S. in Pennsylvania, honeybees may play a key role in spreading viruses to wild bumblebees. Honeybees may play a role in increasing virus levels in wild bumblebees each spring, according to researchers at Penn State who analyzed seasonal trends of parasite and virus transmission in bees. The study, published in the journal Ecosphere, found that honeybees consistently had higher levels of viruses than bumblebees. Additionally, while both types of bees had lower virus prevalence in the winter, only bumblebees experienced negligible levels in the spring. Heather Hines, associate professor of biology and entomology in the College of Agricultural Sciences and corresponding author on the study, said this suggests that honeybees may be reinfecting bumblebees that otherwise would have had very low virus prevalence each spring. She added that the findings help improve the understanding of how pathogens may be transmitted between wild and managed bees, as well as why pathogens in bees are changing and what can be done to reduce them. Our data suggests that healthy wild bee communities require healthy honeybee colony management, she said. Practices that help reduce disease loads in honeybees, including ensuring cross-season high-quality nutrition, reducing pesticides, and mitigating varroa mites, which are known to be responsible for higher late-season viral loads. Hines explained that while the study points to honeybees as spring viral reservoirs, this doesn't mean that honeybees are bad, but rather that honeybee colony management is important for healthy pollinator communities. So again, the article kind of continues on, but I really think that that's a neat subject. It's worth a read. It's probably about another 2 or 3 minute read for you, so it's not going to take too long. But that's really important, and I think it's cool to understand how those interactions are. I think a lot of us are always thinking that our bees are sort of siloed. They're in their own kind of swim lane, and they only interact with, you know, maybe other races of European bees. But, you know, clearly we can see, well, we obviously know that they interact with, you know, Africanized bees and mating and other things. But it's just kind of both cool and interesting to see that there's interaction with the bumblebees as well. All right, folks. Well, that is going to do it for today's In the News episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and we're looking forward to talking to you again here soon. Please check us out on YouTube. We've got new stuff coming out over there all the time. I'm trying to kind of dual broadcast. I'm trying to put things on here and over there at the same time. It's been a little bit of a hectic couple of, like, I don't know, about the last 8 or 9 days. Our oldest cat in the family had a near-death experience, we'll call it. And he's getting better. Our fingers are crossed and we're kind of nursing him. But, like, I don't know, man, I'm back in like paramedic days. I'm pushing meds and I'm holding the cat down and, you know, jamming pills down his throat and all of that. And as everybody's favorite beekeeper, the Fee beekeeper, is off to college today. We dropped her off this morning. So my little baby is in a dorm room now. And I don't know when we're going to have her on, but you know, maybe it'll be easier to get a hold of her now. Maybe I can just dial her up and get her on the phone and talk to her. But anyway, I hope everyone's well. Take care. Be kind to one another. And remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.